Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. And this podcast is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy League, soon the home of the first Calcio Land Fantasy Calcio League. And we look forward to competing with all our listeners on the platform that our great friends at Euro Fantasy League provide. So today we're going to kind of pivot and talk about the remainder main storylines in the transfer window, answer a lot of Twitter questions that we didn't have a chance to get to on Friday. But before we get to that, I am joined by our great friend, co-host, producer of the show, Alex Goldberg, maker of fantastic videos. So let's wrap up the World Cup, Alex. Let me ask you, what was your main takeaways from yesterday's final?
My main takeaway, David, was that great talent in France was managed in a team-like manner. And that is so important with great talent like France has. I've made the comparison before. It reminds me of when the USA men's basketball team got bronze, which they should never get, but they included too many stars. And I know Didier Deschamps received a lot of criticism early on in the tournament for putting Blaise Matuidi at a left mid or a left wing, you could say, for starting Olivier Giroud and not playing Ousmane Dembele, for taking out some of France's stars. But when you have a Paul Pogba, an Antoine Griezmann, and a Kylian Mbappe, you don't need that many other stars. You need solid players that can be role players. Now, with that said, it's not like anybody on France is a scrub or a slouch, but I thought Didier Deschamps did such a great job of making France a team. I think major credit goes to him, because when you're managing all of that talent, David, it's so much easier to lose than it is to win. If you win, they just say, well, you should have won. But if you lose, they say, oh, how could he not win with all that talent? And I thought all of the players, David, especially in the final, really dropped their egos. Not that they really had a big ego at all, but one moment Pogba scores, the whole team gets excited. Mbappe scores, the whole team gets excited. Every little thing, it looked like France was really clicking on all cylinders and working as a team, which was really important because they were playing maybe the ultimate team in Croatia, led by obviously Luka Modric, who defines a quiet leader, a quiet soldier. I love the contrast of the two teams going into the game, but I really thought they were well represented. Croatia tried as hard as they could. They never gave up. Just like this whole tournament, their back was against the wall, but they kept plugging away. But France's talent won out because they played like a team. And how can you not be impressed by Kylian Mbappe? He was just incredible. 19 years old, and he's scoring a goal in the World Cup. When I was 19, I don't even want to say what I was doing. So I was just overall really impressed by the fact that France was able to play as a team, because it's not as easy as it looks when you have all that talent. That was my main takeaway, David. How about you?
So maybe it's because I spent a lot of my weekend reading all these tweets on Sarri, and Sarri hasn't won anything, so Chelsea's making a mistake hiring him. So maybe that it's because that was in the back of my mind, but I felt there was a lot of parallels between France, Croatia, and the Scudetto race we saw between Juve and Napoli. Now, I think France, the way they play, very similar to Juve. You always kept wondering, we know this team has another gear. Why aren't they just going to this gear and putting the games away? You kind of felt like France was always doing the bare minimum to win. And look, it paid off in the end the same way it did for Juve. Croatia, definitely see some parallels to Napoli. Definitely an exciting team, the way they play. I thought they were brilliant in yesterday's final, particularly. But I think, you know, when you don't have nearly as much talent as your opponent, your margin for error is really slim to non-existent. And I felt, you know, Napoli, there's been a lot of criticism of Sarri. Look, there's definitely things he could have done better during the season. But you also can say that about Allegri. And Allegri just had a bigger margin for error. So that was interesting to me, was looking at the parallels between the two teams. I do think in the end, the best team won the World Cup. That doesn't always happen. So good for France. They have such a young team that we might see them at this stage for quite some time. But Alex, I'd be remiss to ask you, because there was a lot of buzz after the Belgian game on some of Hazard's quotes about his future. You've done an outstanding video about this, so I'd be remiss to ask about you. I know some people think we covered Chelsea too much, but this is the transfer story of the moment. So we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we didn't discuss it at the top. So let me ask you, Alex, how concerned are you on a scale of 1 to 10 that he could leave, and what was your reaction to his quotes?
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being really concerned, I'm going to say a 3, David. I still think there's only, at least personally, I'm no reporter, but I still think there's only about a 30% chance he leaves. Now, do I like at all even talking about the thought of Eden Hazard leaving Chelsea Football Club? Of course not. And do I love when he starts off a quote saying, "I've had 6 wonderful years at Chelsea"? No, but everything else he said has been pretty consistent. He's always said, recently at least, that Chelsea know what to do if they want to keep him. And some can say that sounds obnoxious, but he doesn't mean it that way. He's just saying they know what they need to do if they want to keep him. And he's also always said if he were to go somewhere, Real Madrid would interest him. He's always said that. So he's been nothing but consistent in saying that. Am I a little bit worried that he could leave because he's just put on a masterclass at the World Cup? Every top team would conceivably want him, and maybe he starts to want to maybe be the face of Champions League football and maybe be the face of Real Madrid. I guess, but I honestly think he's very happy at Chelsea. He's a family man. He's not necessarily like all the other superstars in the world. Family, I'm not saying family doesn't matter to them, but he has a different persona. He doesn't go out and do nightlife. He really likes staying at home with his wife and his 3 kids in London. He just wants Chelsea to prove to him that they really want him. He still needs an improved contract. In my opinion, he should be the captain of Chelsea. Some can tell me being the captain of your country is being different than the captain of your club, but I absolutely think he deserves it. He's very well liked by his teammates. And if Gary Cahill's going to be captain, then just make Eden Hazard captain, goddammit. So I absolutely think there are many things Chelsea can do to keep him. But I really do think, sure, those comments, David, were made after an emotional World Cup too. So even though I'm not reading too much into them, I still think it's totally understandable that he might take a step back and think about how long the Conte saga went on and maybe just give a broader statement. But I think once he talks to someone like Maurizio Sarri, by the way, he's still under contract. So once he talks to a Maurizio Sarri and Sarri whispers sweet nothings into his ear about how good the offense can look with him, I absolutely think Hazard will stay this next year. And that's really all it should take, David, is 1 year of Sarri ball, and I feel like Eden Hazard might say, Chelsea's going to be my club forever and ever. So I'm being optimistic, but I honestly, objectively, do not think he will leave. Did Cristiano Ronaldo leaving Real Madrid help all of this? Of course not, but I still don't think he will leave. But that's just me. David, I got to ask you, in your opinion, what are the odds he leaves?
So important to note, I don't have any recent reports on this. So I'm just looking at this, you know, kind of laying the lay of the land with what's going on with Hazard. So you mentioned Ronaldo leaving. That's definitely a factor. Real Madrid definitely needs to make probably a big signing to make up for that. Hazard, as you mentioned, has flirted with the idea of Real Madrid. Now, granted, Zidane's not there anymore. You got to wonder how much of a factor that is. But, you know, you have an opening at Real Madrid at a time that makes sense for him. And in addition to that, this is a season where Chelsea is in the Champions League. Now, we've seen plenty of clubs make big moves without the Champions League. So you got to wonder how much that is a factor. But if you look at it, there are, you know, if you looked at the circumstances where you could say, or maybe there is, this could be the time he leaves. In a way, it reminds me a little bit of last season when Barcelona, when Neymar left, I was like, geez, this could be a great opportunity for Dybala, who's never hidden the fact he'd like to play with Messi and at Barcelona. There was an opening for it. And I was like, geez, you know, this looks like as good a time as ever for him to go there. He had come off a really good season, had done well in the Champions League for Juve, and then he ended up staying. So maybe the same thing will happen here. Okay, so now that the World Cup is out of the way, I feel like it's Alex and my time to shine for the next 3 weeks or so to talk just about transfers. It's amazing to say that because now the window closes before the games actually start. In the Premier League, we only have about 3 weeks, Serie A about a month. It's going to go by fast. But now with no more World Cup out there, we're going to be talking more and more about transfers. So we wanted to talk about the main storylines to kind of get you, you know, maybe a lot of you were distracted with the World Cup, Look at the things that I think are going to be the main headlines in the transfer news for the next few weeks. So which ones are we going to go over, Alex?
All right, well, it's only appropriate we start with this one because it kind of ties into what we just talked about. So, David, the first one we'll talk about is who will Real Madrid sign to soften the blow of CR7's departure?
Definitely a very important topic. So I actually saw today someone at The Guardian that really knows what he's talking about wrote about Gareth Bale potentially staying and him being basically the main guy to take over for Ronaldo. In a lot of ways, makes sense. He was the hero of the last Champions League final that seemed to have rubbed Ronaldo the wrong way. Look, if healthy, Bale's as good a replacement for Ronaldo as you're going to get. So it looks like there's momentum for him staying. We talked about Hazard. I'm sure we'll have more on Hazard's situation later in the week. I'm going to research this a little bit more to give our listeners more information. A player who almost certainly won't be going to Real Madrid is Mauro Icardi. His exit clause with Inter just expired over the weekend. Look, I never felt he was going to leave this summer, stuck around when the team was really bad and not in the Champions League. It didn't make sense for him to leave. But look, Real Madrid's always Real Madrid. So it looks like he won't be part of that. The other name is Milinkovic-Savic, granted not a striker, but still someone who would bring some buzz to Real Madrid, maybe not as much after he didn't shine in the World Cup as much as some, including myself, expected. But Jorge Mendes is working on Lazio's behalf to try to get a big offer for him. We'll have to see, too, what happens with Neymar. You got to wonder if he's going to want to be an Mbappe shadow now that Mbappe is really the main star at PSG. But we know how PSG rolls. They're not going to get bullied. They're not going to sell anyone who doesn't want to leave. So at this point, let's see if Bale's the main guy to take the torch. But I certainly would expect a big name or two to join Real Madrid in the coming weeks.
All right, let's go to another popular storyline. Who will Chelsea bring in to help Maurizio Sarri?
So the recent reports on Chelsea, there's four players mainly, and we've talked about them on the podcast. That's obviously Golovin, the Russian midfielder. Chelsea definitely in the driver's seat to sign him. I expect him to come fairly soon. Then, of course, there's Gonzalo Higuain, who's definitely on his way out at Juventus. We've talked about it on the podcast. I get it. People that aren't that familiar with Serie A and just see Higuain as a choker, someone that struggled on the big stage. But he was really excellent at Juventus. And under Maurizio Sarri at Napoli, he was absolutely incredible. Really as good a player in Serie A as we've seen in recent years when he played for Sarri. Granted, he's a little bit older, but I think the two of them together could be a big hit. And then there's Sarri's former defender from his Empoli days, Rugani at Juve. And finally, there's keeper Alisson, who I think would make a lot of sense for Sarri with his ball distribution. He could really be a huge asset for Chelsea if he arrives. Now, he's also been linked to Liverpool. He'd like to go to Real Madrid, but it doesn't sound like Real Madrid are willing to pay the amount that Roma's asking for. But Alisson would be quite the coup for Chelsea with Courtois going to Real Madrid.
I would still absolutely love Alisson. We've talked about it many times. Maybe Thibaut Courtois is a step above in talent, but Alisson would really fit Sarri ball. So, David, let's move on. This is also a very popular topic with CR7 now at Juve. Who will leave Juve?
So Juve did the presentation today. At first, I was, to be honest, very surprised they didn't do a big event in Juve Stadium. But Juve really has never been the team about the superstars and making an individual bigger than the club. Also, for those that aren't that familiar with Juve, they are really a national team. Like, a lot of their fans come from all over Italy. I've been at some of their games. You see all these buses from people traveling from all of Italy to go. So I think it would have been a little bit hard to do it on a Monday night, a weeknight, where people on vacation and working. So in retrospect, I wasn't that shocked. But I digress. We mentioned Higuain and Rugani as two players potentially leaving. I definitely could see that. Juve would save a ton on Higuain's wages. If he leaves on Rugani, they can make a really nice profit plus Valenza because they didn't pay much for him, and it sounds like Chelsea would pay a pretty penny for him. The other player, the most likely, is Alexandro. Looks like PSG is very interested in him. I know Manchester United has been linked to him as well. Let's see if they kind of relaunch and join the race, but PSG looks to be the favorite right now. I think Juve has to be thrilled that if Alexandro leaves, that he's linked to two clubs that rich so they can get a big return. So those are the three right now. Let's see if more happens in the coming weeks.
All right. Another popular topic is Milan's ownership. So, David, what will the Elliott Fund's approach be with Milan?
It's a great question. So the Elliott Fund finally took over for Lee Yong-hong. Not surprisingly, the Chinese owner completely disappeared off the face of the earth. I think that really tells you a lot. If you've been very cynical about the Milan sale, the way things have played out in the past few days, you got to say I might have been right about the whole situation. It's very interesting to see what they'll do because the Elliott Fund can do one of two things. They've talked about putting money into Milan, trying to reestablish that brand. So they could say, look, Milan has a fairly young team. Maybe they believe in Gattuso. Maybe they say it would make sense for us to invest in Milan a year or two, bring them back to the Champions League and sell them for more money. Or they could decide just to sell really quick and make their money back now. Look, the Elliott Fund is all about making money. Milan's an asset on their hand. They're going to make the best of it. So I think it also depends on the types of offers that they can garner for them.
All right, David, the last big storyline. Will someone meet Roma's asking price for Alisson? And will we see a keeper carousel?
Yeah, so we've hinted a little bit about this in the beginning of the podcast, but here's the thing for Alisson. What's really different about Roma this year is in years past. That run in the Champions League, they made so much money, and they sold some players, Nainggolan especially, before the June 30th deadline for financial fair play, that in theory, they don't have to sell Alisson unless they get a huge offer. They are looking for 70 million euro. A huge return, a lot more than what they paid for. So they want to be blown over. The other thing, too, is Alisson would really like to go to Real Madrid. He already agreed to terms with them. I believe his wife is Spanish, as John Solano told us. I think he'd really like to go there. But maybe Alisson and Roma say, you know what, if nobody wants to pay the price, maybe Alisson isn't thrilled to go to England. I don't know if he is or not, but I do know that he's very interested in Real Madrid. Maybe they waited out a year. On the flip side, Liverpool has a great relationship with Roma. They really need a keeper. I mean, Alisson on Liverpool would be a massive upgrade for them. If he goes to Chelsea, it would be the carousel with Courtois going to Real Madrid. So let's see what happens. But I think one factor in this situation that maybe some people aren't realizing is that Roma doesn't have to sell. So if they have to hold on to them for another year, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. So now that those are the main storylines, I'm sure we'll be talking about all those things in the coming weeks. But in the meantime, our listeners sent in some great questions. So Alex, which ones are we going to go over today?
All right. This one interests me. With the Sarri and Jorginho signings done, can we expect more business between Chelsea and Napoli?
So I think during the process of the Sarri saga, Chelsea fans got pretty familiar with Napoli's lawyer, who made a lot of statements throughout the process. And an interesting tidbit that he shared, I'm not sure if it was talked about outside of Italy, as part of the deal between Sarri and Chelsea, Chelsea can't use any of the exit clauses on Napoli's players. Now, they can still negotiate with Napoli, probably for a higher price, because that's how Napoli rolls. So let's see if there are some players that make sense. Interestingly, today, Napoli's president, De Laurentiis, said they're going to use the upcoming friendlies to see which players don't make sense for Ancelotti, and they would consider selling them. One player that I would look at is definitely Callejon, really perfect for Sarri, could really help Chelsea learn the system. It looks like Napoli is phasing him out, so that would be one player. But I think it's really important to note that moving forward, Chelsea won't be able to use exit clauses on Napoli players.
All right, next Twitter question. Could Manchester United go after Ivan Perisic after his excellent performances in the World Cup?
Look, Paddy Seach was sensational in this World Cup. He was really motivated. There are some games where he's not as motivated, but he really showed up in Russia. So one thing, though, that I think is really important, and look, you know, Manchester United fans probably are like now regretting that they didn't get Paddy Seach, is Inter's situation is much better financially than the last year. Manchester United were looking to buy Paddy Seach before Inter paid, raised the money for their financial fair play last year. This year, Inter is had no need to sell. Paddy Seach been really good for them. They're back in the Champions League. So I'll tell you this much. If you thought last year Inter were smoking something really powerful to ask for a lot of money for Paddy Seach, this year is going to be even more. So I don't see this happening, but you never know. I would guess Paddy Seach would really have to push for this move. But at this time, there's no indication that's the case.
All right, next Twitter question, David. Why would Milan consider selling Locatelli rather than just loaning him out?
Very good question. Look, I'm not a huge Locatelli fan. I'm general not someone who gets really excited by prospects. Was it two seasons ago already? He had that game winner against Juve. I think he's really been living off the reputation of that. I think it says a lot that neither Montella nor Gattuso, so two coaches, really focused on him a lot. But look, he's still a prospect with a big transfer value because of the potential upside. So why would Milan loan him out instead of selling him? And Milan's ideally looking to sell him while keeping a buyback clause, and they want to do that with Sassuolo. So if you've listened to a lot of our podcasts on the financial aspect of transfers, a youth team player from Milan, if you sell them, is essentially a pure profit. That's why you see Inter selling a lot of their youth team players, probably for inflated fees, because that's a pure profit. So if you sell Locatelli, say, for $12 million, and you keep a buyback to buy him back for $15 or $16 million, in the short term, you get a $12 million profit. And then, you know, if he pans out at Sassuolo, you can buy him back. Sure, you're spending a little bit more, but that's on another financial statement for a different year. Milan, in the short term, is going to have to raise some funds one way or the other, and it's not surprising that a youth team player would be looked at that. So I think these selling a player with a buyback clause is basically just the continuation of the co-ownership deals we had in Italy. You're just locking in the cost from the beginning.
All right, staying on Milan. Given Milan's financial troubles, which of their players could be on their way out?
So we're going to know a lot more on Saturday. Milan's going to have their big board meeting, the first one where Elliot really, taking over. They're going to have their appeal for the Europa League, I believe, on Thursday. So we'll know a lot more about Milan in the short term. But I definitely expect them to have to sell a few players for big money. One player that makes a lot of sense to me is Sousa. Was great on the Montella. I thought he was by far Milan's best player on the Montella, but on the Gattuso really struggled. He has an exit clause. It has expired. It was worth $38 million abroad. I think it expired over the weekend, but he could still be sold. It wouldn't surprise me to see him back in La Liga, back in the Premier League. Maybe that's a player that Chelsea looks at as well. I don't see Milan probably turning down a big bid of over $40 million, something around that form. The other players to watch, we talked about Locatelli, so a youth team player that you can sell for a big profit. Bonucci, you know, is 31. It would be hard to get more than what they spent last year to get him from Juve. They'd be lucky to get back the amortized value for sure, but you save a ton in wages with Bonucci. You're saving around $16 million a year before taxes by moving Bonucci. You also have to wonder if Bonucci is ready to go now. This is another year without the Champions League. He's really looking at a brand new project at Milan. He's 31 years old. Look, in the past, he hasn't wanted to leave Italy because of family situations. Maybe now he looks at it differently. I wouldn't shock me to see him at PSG or Manchester City. The other player is Donnarumma. And look, a problem for Donnarumma, A, he's not coming off a great season. His transfer value's gone down since it was at its peak. And the other thing now is he earns a ton of money. There's not a lot of clubs that can pay $12 million before taxes to keeper. Granted, Donnarumma has a lot of upside, but that's a lot of money. So it wouldn't shock me if Milan is stuck with both Donnarumma and Piperina. And you got to wonder if that's a good use of their resource, because those guys earn a lot of money.
All right, next question. Could the center back Musacchio head to the newly promoted Fulham?
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of questions from Fulham fans. Di Marzio certainly hit a home run with that Sarri deal. So now Fulham fans are on the Di Marzio revolution train. Look, Fulham had made an inquiry for Musacchio. This was about 10 days ago. Milan's situation, though, is really a mess. We really don't know what they're going to do on the transfer market. You also have to wonder if Bonucci is a factor. If Bonucci is sold, maybe it makes sense to keep Musacchio and partner him with Romagnoli. So I think we'll know more on Musacchio's future after this week.
All right, fair enough. How about this, David? Could Marcelo follow CR7 to Juventus?
Well, look, after Juve royally proved me wrong with CR7, I was skeptical they could afford him up until the morning that it happened. I'm going to go on the assumption that those guys running the club are much smarter than me. They are there winning titles. They figured out how to do this. I'm out here recording a podcast, so they know more what they're doing. But when I look at the finances, it really looks like Juve would be pushing their luck with this. At the same time, maybe if Marcelo really wants to leave, and I don't know if that's true or not, Real Madrid has great relationships with Juve. So I've learned the hard way. I'm not going to put anything past Juve, but this would surprise me almost as much as them signing Ronaldo.
All right, fair enough. David, how about this? What do you make of Atalanta signing Zapata and their pursuit of Anderlecht's Dendoncker?
Yeah, so I had one of our listeners was really surprised that Atalanta was making these big money moves. But, you know, if you followed Atalanta the past few years, they have made a small fortune selling a lot of players. Gagliardini to Inter, Kessie and Conti to Milan. They've done Cristante this summer to Roma. They've made a small fortune on these players. And granted, they've done a lot of these deals on loan with option to buy to spread in when the revenues come into their club. But at the same time, when you bring in a big transfer fee for one of your players, it only really helps your budget for a year and the year that it happens. So Atalanta has to also start spending some of this money sooner or later. Now, I was surprised they went for Zapata, who's a very good striker, one of the best pure number nines on a mid-table team in Serie A. But they were already stacked up front. So it surprised me. But I guess when you have money to burn, these are the types of deals that you do. So I wouldn't be surprised if Atalanta makes more moves. Their manager, Gasperini, said he needs at least a few more players on the squad. And unlike years past, Atalanta has money to burn and they're ready to spend it.
Okay, next Twitter question. David, which transfers were the worst of the summer so far?
You know, this is a really good question, and I was really trying to think of a good answer. And again, I'm going to go back to Zapata, surprised me a little bit, just because I don't see a huge need for him at Atalanta. I really like their young striker, Barrow, and it looks like this might hold him back a little bit. I thought Pirin, for him, it's a weird transfer to go to Juve. I'm not saying it's a bad move for Juve. Great that you have two excellent keepers. I always thought it was surprising that they didn't want to cast a shadow over Szczesny with Buffon. But then they brought in Pirin, who's going to be competition for him for years to come. So this is a great question. I'm going to have to think about it more, but those are off the top of my head. Maybe our listeners can send some in using the Calcioland hashtag.
All right, David, this is the last question. Let's move away from football. How do you rate Slipknot and Stone Sour singer Corey Taylor? It feels like he's underrated.
So I got to be honest, I didn't answer this question sooner because I'm not a huge expert in Slipknot. Like, I know they're not like Limp Bizkit and Korn per se. They're a much heavier band, so they should be up my alley. But I will say that time period in music, the whole nu metal thing, was probably my least favorite era in rock. But because the listener asked us, I did listen to a lot of their songs. And I have to say, I'm very impressed with this guy, Corey Taylor, as a singer. I knew him a little bit, but not really in depth. Definitely has a lot of range. In a way, reminds me a little bit of Mike Patton, one of my favorite singers who's in Faith No More and Dead Cross, like someone that really has amazing range and can sing anything. So as always, we love getting questions on pop culture, music, TV, films, journalism on top of Serie A and transfers. So please keep sending them in using the CalcioLand hashtag. We really appreciate your support. Alex and I, our podcast is really growing thanks to you guys. We appreciate all the support. Please keep tweeting about the podcast, telling your followers. If you're listening to us in iTunes, please leave us a rating. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you want to leave us a comment, please do that. Remember to subscribe and support the podcast. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to doing more episodes later this week. And a big thank you to our great friends of the Euro Fantasy League. We look forward to competing with all our listeners in the Serie A Fantasy Football League.